Welcome to episode 140 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's episode, I chat digital with Kevin Kinghorn of the Vancouver Canucks.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals.
And now, here's your host, who just reset the Twitter password for your favorite athlete, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. It is appropriate that I am still resetting Twitter passwords for athletes after they've been hacked. This being the 140th episode, right, tying up with 140 characters behind Twitter. I am your host, Sean Callanan from the Sports Geek Podcast. If you're a new listener, if you're someone that I've recently met, either on my trip to the US or even at a sports technology trade mission here in Melbourne, welcome to the podcast. My name is Sean Callanan. I run Sports Geek. You're listening to the Sports Geek Podcast on your favourite podcast platform. It might be iTunes. It might be Pocket Casts. It might be some other app. Hopefully you can get it. If you can't get it on your favourite app, please let me know. And if you are listening to it and you do enjoy it, can you please leave a review? We're now at 107 iTunes reviews worldwide. So please go to the iTunes store. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. It will take you to the iTunes store. Leave one in your country. Let me know how many are in your country. If your country has not left one, please leave one. Thank you very much, Dave Wakeland. He left the latest review. We're now at 107. If you do want to talk to me, you can contact me multiple ways. At Sean Callanan on Twitter. At Sean Callanan on Snapchat. Now that I've got my Snapchat spectacles, there's a little bit more content flowing through on the old Snap, or you can use the old-fashioned way, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. I'm now back in Melbourne after my two-week trip to the US, the Sports Geek trip. If you were following on Snapchat and Instagram and things like that, you would have seen that trip. It was a whirlwind tour, lots of travelling, not much sleep, lots of terrific meetings, good memories, and more importantly, I met a lot of smart people who will be future podcast guests. So the quick recap, if you weren't following along, I went to Detroit, got a tour of all the stadiums thanks to Jim Darrow at the Detroit Tigers and John King at the Red Wings to check out the new precinct where Little Caesars Arena, where the Pistons and the Red Wings are going to play from next year. Caught up with Mike Denae at the Pistons to watch a Pistons-Bulls game. One more game for me as a lifelong Detroit Pistons fan. I was joking to a few people there. It's good to catch up with some of the Pistons staff. Last time I was in Detroit, Grant Hill was a rookie. So it's a little while ago. Then a couple of days in Minnesota with Todd Kaflisch and caught up with Ted Johnson at the Timberwolves. Toured around US Bank Stadium, home of the Vikings and home of the next Super Bowl. Caught up with Mitch Helgerson at Minnesota Wild game. And also caught a Timberwolves game with Carolyn Waddell from the Timberwolves. So it was great to catch up with them and see the practice facility that Ted Johnson spoke about when he was on the podcast last. Then six crazy days in Austin, Texas for South by Southwest. A quick shout out to my South by Southwest roommate, Lenny Go. We'll be catching up for a full South by Southwest breakdown recap very soon. But it was great to catch up with so many people. I think when Jacob Berman and Kevin Cote invited me to the Facebook Sports Happy Hour, I think there was 15 in total Sports Geek podcast guests in the room. So great to see so many familiar faces and meet some new ones. And then spent a couple of days, one night in San Antonio. I went to a game in San Antonio and caught up with Lawrence Payne and talked what they've been doing in San Antonio and how they're trying to transform their digital and how they're putting it out into the market. And then I spent the last couple of days in Los Angeles. It was great to catch up and meet in real life. We're sort of connected on the internet. Jen Van Dyke, who runs things all digital and partnerships at the LA Clippers. So it was great to catch up with her and talk shop. So some of those names I mentioned, actually all of those names I mentioned, are going to be on the podcast soon. Had some great discussions while I was over there, and I hope to have many more. So for the people who I did catch up with and stayed with and hung out with, thank you very much for your company. And now what I want to do is lead into the intro for this episode. I've known Kevin Kinghorn from the Vancouver Canucks for a while. We have bounced backwards and forwards from a schedule point of view to get this podcast in the book. So it has been hanging over our heads to say we've got to get this, in the can. So it's really good to catch up with Kevin earlier this week to talk about, I guess, his career in digital, moving from journalism into the digital marketing side, and how he's tackling things from a digital point of view for the Canucks, from a brand, and how they're looking to get business results, because that's the business we're in. We're in the sports business, and making sure that they're delivering revenue from digital. So I always enjoy chatting with Kevin, and I know that you will definitely enjoy this conversation with Kevin Kinghorn from the Vancouver Canucks. Very happy to welcome a very good friend of mine, Kevin Kinghorn from the Vancouver Canucks. Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Thanks, Sean.
So, first of all, you have been at the Canucks for 10 years. You are now the Senior Director of Digital and Marketing. Do you want to give us the Twitter version of your backstory? Give us 10 years and 140 characters. How have you gone from starting at the Canucks to where you are now?
Yeah, I started writing for the Canucks as a freelancer, I think, 13 years ago.
Yep.
And what happened was the guy who was in the web job, who I reported to at the time, moved on to a different job. And so I moved in and took over the webmaster's role.
Yep. And so I do love it. I had Jeremy McPeak, former Suns webmaster. I love it when I'm talking to the guys that were those original webmasters, and you were pretty much doing everything, content, and then starting to work at this newfangled thing called the web. And so now your role as Senior Director of Digital Marketing, are you still in the content space? What are you doing now, and how's the structure of the digital and the marketing department, the content department? How does that work at the Canucks?
Yeah, so we split out the content department. So that's run by Ryan Nicholas, who does an absolutely fantastic job. He has a great team, and they really focus on sort of filling the channels with content. Our role is strategy behind web, social, mobile. How are we using those tools? And then fan data would be another piece that we have under the umbrella. But it's really focused on sort of a high level strategy and executing against the brand and sales goals.
Okay, so your role, you've got the content team that is keeping the fan engagement, ticking the fan engagement goals, making sure Canucks fans are getting the information they're not getting from traditional media. And sort of being that, that traditional, hey, we're the media outlet for the Canucks, and your team is really focused on the business outcomes from digital, whether it be ticket sales and brand partnerships and partnerships with your sponsors. That's pretty much your wheelhouse now.
It is a little bit bigger than that, in the sense that I would say that any engagement with a fan through a digital channel, that is what we really focus on. Like, how are we building that relationship with the fan? How are we moving them down the funnel? How are we creating a better experience for them with our organization, whether it's through website, whether it's through social media, whether it's through a mobile app, or even in person to a lot of degrees.
So it's a really unique, transition to come from, the journalistic background into the pure, digital marketing space. I see a lot of people working now in the digital space and the marketing space have either come from that journalistic background like yourself, and then there's the other side of the equation that are people like myself coming in from the geek side. So take us through how a brand campaign for the Canucks, because Canucks are a massive brand, and I think it was Ray Wang at C Conference a couple of years ago that sort of said, people see sports brands as these massive brands, but behind the scenes they don't have the amount of people and resources that, say, a Coca-Cola or a Pepsi do, but the brands are massive, and the Canucks are a massive brand, obviously, in the North American sports scene, but even bigger in Vancouver and Canada. How has your brand marketing and brand campaigns changed over the past 5 years, and where's digital now fit?
Yeah, that's a great question. So You know, traditionally we've gone out in August. Our season starts for all intents and purposes in September.
Yep.
But we've gone out in August with more of a traditional campaign where we're trying to hit people with outdoor TV or radio, and that's run a little bit in a vacuum in the sense that then we'd launch our sales campaign, and again we'd use some traditional channels. But you know, just to give you an idea, I think 4 or 5 years ago, we spent five figures on digital advertising, and now 90% of our budget is put against digital.
And that's the thing. So that move is happening because you, as a big brand, you've still got to do, you know, the bus shelters and the billboards, because your fans want to, you know, hey, the Canucks are coming back. I'm ready for the fire up for the season. So there's a little bit of, you've got to tick that box, but the advantage of digital is you can track it. And you can build out these audiences, and you can reuse these audiences again and again, and so that's why the budgets are moving to digital. Is there any particular platforms that you're finding that you're leaning into, whether it be YouTube or Facebook or Google or, you know, Spotify? Are there any particular platforms that you're are the main ones from your point of view from that digital spend?
Yeah, I would say, you know, just from a strict platform perspective, obviously the big guys, Facebook is huge for us. You know, search is huge for us. We do a lot of display as well. But to me, it's like, I'm stealing a line from Dwayne Hankins in Portland. Our brand campaign, all I care about is I just want the hairs on people's arms to stand up. I want them to get emotionally engaged.
Yep.
And then I want to take that that engagement with our content, whether that's on YouTube or Facebook or on our website. And I want to build audiences from that. And what we've been able to do is build a custom audience, whether it's Facebook or YouTube, and then bring them along, bring those fans along to a journey to the point where we're interested in engaging them in a ticket sale. And it's not just a quick, like, watch the video, I'm going to hit you with an ad.
Yep.
It's watch that video, I'm going to engage you with a little bit more content, a little bit deeper, and we're going to walk along until we get to the point where it's single game tickets on sale, or we're selling memberships and we're trying to really cement that relationship with you know, in-person experience. And it's worked extremely well.
Yeah, and that's where you're getting, you know, you can now, and the best teams are doing, is getting more personalized with that approach, because you're right, some people are, hey, I'm going to go to a couple of games, so they want the season ticket. They want the single game ticket message, and they're the ones that are going to bite down on that. But the fan that is super invested, is watching every video, that's consuming all your content, that lives in the geographical region, they make more sense from a membership point of view. So, you know, getting that funnel right and trying to figure out where the people are. But I love what you said there, the quote from Dwayne. You don't need to be selling your tickets on the first video that they see in August. Like, you need to build up that excitement and have those multiple touch points. And that's where, you know, that's the place that you're working to say, we want that hairs up on the back of the neck standing up on with the video, and getting your content team to build this great content. But then you're just saying, okay, they're the people who've watched, you know, 95% of that video, they're going to start seeing this type of content, and it might be promoting your content, but also sort of moving along that sales funnel.
Yeah, we don't even tag a lot of that media with a sales message. Like, I would say probably 80% of what's out there is just a strict brand video, and yep. It really is about selling the future of the team. And, you know, as we've talked about before, teams not performing well on the ice in the sense of wins and goals. It's still a great product. It's very exciting. But what we're trying to do is sell that vision. You know, I want to show the fans, like, this is why you should be engaging with the team. This is why you should be on that train. And it's an easy story to tell. We have some really great dynamic young players. You can see where the team is going. And that's really the emotional piece of it. It's the science behind it. Of trying to build those audiences, and what are those trigger points, and how are we engaging with people, not just once, but in a series of five different engagements to lead them to that sale. And, you know, thinking back to some of the moves that we've made, we brought in our own, or developed in-house our own guy, James Liu, who's just an absolute wizard. And he manages manually all of our different campaigns across platforms, probably the best move that we ever made.
And what I do like is the discussion and the language that you're using around members. Was there as opposed to season ticket holders? I've said this on the podcast. I think Melbourne overall as a city is is world leading in membership marketing and telling people they should become a member, because it becomes more an identity based decision. Like, I'm a Canucks fan. That's why, you know, that's why it's not a financial transactional decision. And I think what you're talking about there about the brand campaign and having people, you know, build up their emotional engagement with the team is really important. Was there a flick of the switch to move from to calling your fans season ticket holders to members, or is it something that you have always adopted?
No, you're right. Yeah, that there was a change. And actually, it was, I think it was the SEED conference in, say, San Francisco. Maybe it was, anyway, it was Scott Loft from Oklahoma City Thunder. He gave just a fantastic presentation and really talked about the way that their organization approaches the season ticket members. And that really resonated with me. Like, well, when you're buying a membership with our team, you're joining the family, right? Yep. We're building a relationship with you. And I think that if you're letting that guide all of your decisions on, you know, that membership front, you're doing a great job, right? And you're going to end up in a good place. It's when you start to look at it as a value-based equation strictly that I think you can get off track pretty easily.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, for those who, and I have seen more and more teams adopted, I think the guys at Kansas City call theirs a membership, that kind of thing. And it just, yeah, it gives you this sense of belonging more so than, oh, here's my invoice and here's my bill for my season ticket. And I'm holding a physical thing, which is a ticket, when it's like, no, you know, you want your fans, you want your members, you know, you want their Twitter profiles to say, you know, I do this for my living and I'm a member of the Vancouver Canucks. And like, there's just the twist in the change in language from a brand campaign and then having all of your, you know, changing all your customer service reps to become, you know, membership representatives and that kind of thing is so important. And it's just that identity thing. Like, if someone says to me, you know, are you a Collingwood member? And I say, yes, I am. And if I meet a Collingwood fan, my question is, are you a member? And you can sort of get your fans to be at that, I call it guilt level marketing. If you start pushing that membership message so well, then your members become your best advocates.
Yeah, you know, we use a term around here. It's from our branding creative director. He says, you know, sports is the one thing that gives you permission to hug a stranger. And it's absolutely true. I mean, it is everything that we try and build upon. That's what you're selling, right? You're selling emotional investment with the team. People care so much. When you're at the bottom of the cycle and you're struggling, you know, sometimes it can turn a bit negative. It's because people care. Yep. Like, we're custodians of that brand. And I feel like we like to talk about the obligation to the fans to uphold that those brand points.
So you've got these, you know, engaged fans, these members, they're holding your brand and your team dear to their heart. And so then the other side of the equation is how do you get partners and sponsors involved without breaking that really tight bond that you've already made? So take us through, because you are now, like you said, you're the custodians for the fans. And so how do you get, you know, the partnerships part of the equation, which is, you know, the other part of what your role is, you know, monetizing the fan base and making sure there's good results for your partners. How do you manage that balance?
Yeah, it's always a struggle.
Yep.
You know, it's so different when you sit on this side of the desk and you're trying to engage fans and say, look, here's why you should care. And I always try and look at it as I'm making an introduction. I'm introducing the brand to a fan and a fan to the brand. As long as there's some synergy there and there's something of value, I think it's a win.
Yep. And do you have, and I think I did ask this question to Dwayne Henkins at South by Southwest. They had a panel about sponsorship. And I said, here's the hypothetical. A sponsor comes along with a big bag of money and a terrible idea that you know your fans will hate. How do you handle that? And we've all been in that scenario. There'll be people nodding their head and going, yes, I had one this morning. A sponsor said they wanted to do this and it's terrible. Have you developed processes to at least start that conversation and say, well, we've got these guidelines that say, here's what our brand says, here's what our fans want. These are the boxes you have to tick? Or is there some way that you can rearrange that conversation to say, this is what we need to do, this is the Canucks way, so to speak. Have you sort of gone through those awkward conversations with partners and your partnership team to say, that's not going to work for us, but this will?
100%. That's exactly it. I think every time you ask the question, like, what is the objective?
Yep.
Right? And if you have a very clear objective, I can help you achieve that objective. I think where things start to go off the rail is when there's already a concrete idea in place that's being pushed. And I know that's not going to work. I know it's going to resonate with the fans. And it's just working together with a partner and understanding the objective and then being able to deliver against that and showing how we can do that. We've got enough experience and enough case studies under our belt that I can say, look, if all you care about is video views and you want to create a really great Facebook video, I can do that for you.
Yep.
If you want to drive engagement on, you know, leads to a car dealership, for instance, I can do that, and I'll show you how I can do that. It's all just about that that stakeholder meeting and really being clear on what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, the first one that you just said of asking the sponsor, asking the partner, what do you really want? And that the first answer normally is the wrong answer. They normally say, I want this. You know, you ask them like three times until you find out that, you just want brand recognition and be seen, you know, next to our content. And, we can do that with a video. You actually want leads for your car dealership. You want people to go to your store. Like, when you drill down and actually get what they want and try to take away, yes, thank you, you've given us this idea, but what we need to know is, what do you want? And then we can either reformat the idea you've got, but you're right. You should be building up case studies that say, well, this worked for this dealer and this worked for this store. And to be able to go back to the partner, you've got to go back with concrete ideas. You've got to go back with, hey, these are the things that have worked previously. And so building up that little catalogue of case studies is so important for to have a really good conversation with both your partnership team, but also with the sponsors themselves. Because sometimes, part of this education process is protecting the sponsors from really bad ideas. And some of those case studies should be, here's something that we did, 3 years ago when we were still learning the caper, and our sponsor really, forced this campaign down our throat. And again, we'll have nodding heads, people listening going, yes, I've had that before. And having that case study saying, it went really wrong. And this is the reasons why it went really wrong. You know, if you're really going to force me, put a gun to my head to do it, we may be able to do it, but it's not going to work. So you've got to have both the good case studies and the bad ones in your back pocket to be able to bring people along to get the results you want for your fans, because that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to protect your fans and, I guess, protect the sponsor from themselves.
Yeah, follow up on that. I have a team, just an unbelievable team, and they're experts at engaging Canucks fans.
Yep.
This is what they do all day, every day. So let's leverage that. And don't throw in like this pre-baked notion. Give me the objective. We'll throw it in here and let these guys come up with it. I mean, we have just two unreal developers. I have some marketing whizzes. James, I already mentioned. They're just like, they know how to do this all the time, right?
And how do you, from a, like, the digital keeps changing all the time. And, there's always something shiny and new. How do you balance, whether it be coming from a sponsor or even just, hey, there's a new shiny thing. There's, Facebook's rolled out some new functionality. Instagram's rolling out new functionality. It's fighting with Snapchat. Snapchat's rolling out new things. How do you, as, providing strategy both for your team and your content team, how do you balance the need to innovate and the need to be on the new platforms and testing new things out with, this is what works and this is what we've been doing? How do you and your team manage that?
At the end of the day, it's the simple things, I think, that work. And if technology can help you achieve those simple things more efficiently, great. If it's overly complicating something, forget it. And that's really the razor that we use.
So is it just a matter of testing those new platforms and not trying to overcomplicate them to say, we're going to try to do this in an overly complicated way, but more just, we'll test them, see how they work, look back at the numbers, the data doesn't lie, and go from there?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of that, but what I think more is, it's the principle, and I'll use an example. We had a vendor comes in, and the whole idea was, you'd take out a phone, and you'd scan a code, and then the code would, come up with an ad, and you'd take that ad, and you'd go redeem, and it just like... Sean, it was a great story, right? But at the end of the day, it's a really complicated process. And if you just think that through, what is the goal? What are you trying to achieve? There's a much easier way to do that. Yep. You know, where it doesn't involve, you know, building an app that people have to download and then scan an ad. Like, no one wants to scan the ad. Like, just think it through. Oh, all you wanted to do was, you know, have someone come to the store. There's a simpler, easier way to do that. The technologies that, to me, that really work are guys, the Tradable Bits guys, right?
Yep.
Great platform. It's rock solid. The principles are very simple, or the FanServe.
And it's a good way to... Yeah, I do agree. You know, things like, you know, beacons and, you know, God forbid, QR codes, those kind of things. You can say, oh, this is the greatest, latest and greatest. But in the end, you know, a simple fan poll that says, which player do you think is going to play better? The fans get it. They understand it. It's simple. It's not overly complicated. Yeah, making your fans jump through hoops is more trouble than it's worth. So, you know, tackling those problems with a, you know, make it simpler. You know, the whole, we're very big now on the user experience, both from a mobile point of view and a website point of view, but also the customer experience point of view in stadium. You should, you know, put yourself in the customer's shoes. So, you know, when someone says, hey, here's this bright shiny thing, we want people to, you know, walk past a beacon and it's going to pop up and then they're going to ask to be played a video, and like you said, then they enter. Like, most of the time I just tell the person that pitches that type of idea, have you tried it? Mm-hmm. Have you gone through the 7 screens? How was it for you? Because, yeah, you know, if it's simple, go in, vote, enter your details, and you get a coupon, fans will do that. So I think the keeping things simple is a really smart way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I wanted to ask you is around, you know, as the metrics of digital are changing, and, you know, my latest discussion with a lot of teams, the web traffic and the web views and people going to the site is falling. Like, more people are consuming their content in the social space and just staying there. They're not driving through. How is that? Is that a lever that you've had to pull from your partnerships point of view and sponsors, and just from a general content point of view, to say, well, we know the fans are going to consume this just on Facebook or just on Instagram and not come back to the site? How have you had to change, I guess, the way that you're reporting things or the way that you're pitching things to say, well, we've got to be where the fans are, and we've also got to, I guess, make our money where the fans are, and sort of the fish where the fish are sort of philosophy. Has there been a change in focus for you as, you know, if sponsors are saying, we want this many, you know, page views and those kind of things, and are you aggregating them up from a social point of view?
Yeah. A few years ago, we used to get an NHL club comparison report, and it ranked all the teams against one another, and you could see how you did in the league. And we took a lot of pride in being at the top of that list, but, yep, you know, it dawned on us, like, it's true vanity metric. Like, it completely really doesn't matter at the end of the day. It's like, how are you engaging fans? I don't care where. Like, I can go on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook. We could just do display. But, like, how are we finding the right audience?
Yep.
And it's an actionable audience for the partner. And how are we engaging? That's all that matters at the end of the day.
Yep.
If they never hit my website, that's totally fine. And if I was really myopic about the website, I think I'm doing my job wrong.
Yep. And I, as someone who's worked at league level and seen those reports created and then spoken to clubs and seeing those rankings, obviously the natural competitive juices kick in and go, we want to be above our rival.
Yeah.
But you really need to focus on, what do our fans want? What works for our fans? You know, is what I'm doing giving us results? Because every team has different needs. Another team might be, you know, needing to fill a stadium. So that's a different need to another team that has to, you know, is building brand and really pushing hard to, you know, to get a national audience. Like those generic, you're right, those vanity metrics of, oh, this is where you sit on the video views across the league, and this is where you sit from a social point of view. You can't, it's not a fair comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if I have 100,000 fans and somebody else has 500,000, but I can engage 50,000 and activate, and you can only get 10, which would you rather have? It's really about the quality and the audience and what you're doing to engage them or activate them.
And, you know, to defend the people at league level, I know you've got to create these KPIs and sort of push everybody, and, you know, it's the rising tides lift all boats, and if other teams are chasing other teams and it makes them push harder into the market, that's great. But, you know, we are getting more sophisticated in, you're right, you know, you can have 500,000 fans on social, but it's if you get those 50,000 fans to engage with that partner or to engage, you know, become members, that's the value point. And those stats, they're only internal. Like, only you and your team know those stats. And so it's very hard for the league to pull those stats out and sort of say, comparatively, this is what we're doing. So I do feel for people like yourself and people in your content team, and that, you know, unfortunately, that data potentially gets up to sea level and they say, why are we getting beaten by the other team? I think it's really important from, you know, you and your role to say, these are the important metrics for us. You know, our partners are happy, our ticket sales are good, we're building out these audiences, we're getting good data into our database, and move away from those big vanity metrics like following and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
So what I want to do is to have the Sports Geek closing five. So I'm really thankful to have you on the podcast. Like I said, it's been a long time coming, even though we keep catching up at conferences and chatting off podcasts. So closing five, can you remember the first sports event that you ever attended?
Oh, maybe a Seahawks game at the Kingdom?
Seahawks game at the Kingdom, yeah. Was that it? Who do you know who they were playing?
No idea. I want to say the Chargers for some reason, but yeah, no.
I went to a game at the Kingdom. I think I've told this story before. I went to a game at the Kingdom, I want to say in the late 90s, I think it was, and Gary Lewis, who's still working at the Seahawks in the comms role, got me some tickets, and I was sitting in the press box. It was one of the first NFL games I went to. And, you know, for those of you, a lot of listeners have been in press boxes. You're not sitting there drinking beer and loud and those kind of things. So being respectful and just watching the game. And we were sitting behind this guy that kept yelling and screaming. And the Seahawks were playing the Buffalo Bills, Doug Flutie era. Doug Flutie was playing for the Bills at the time. And this guy was screaming at Doug Flutie and yelling. And we're like, we didn't quite figure out what was happening. And then I found out by halftime that it was the owner of the Buffalo Bills, Ralph Wilson, who loves sitting in the press box. Considering the amount of abuse he hurled at Doug Flutie, it was not surprising that Doug Flutie was traded the following season. But that's my Kingdom story from going to a Seahawks game. From a food point of view, what's your favorite? Is there a go-to food or a favorite food that you've consumed at a sports event?
Lobster roll here. Chef Robert Bartley is just unbelievable. And he has, we have a little station called Catch Station where he does seafood. The lobster roll is a must-have.
Oh, very, very good. And what about, what's the first app that you open in the morning?
The first app that I open?
Yeah.
Well, it would be email, but after that, Outlook. Not Outlook. I use Flipboard.
Okay.
Flipboard's my aggregator for content.
Okay. So you go to the news first.
I do. Yeah. Yeah. What do you use?
I've been, from an aggregator point of view, I've used Flipboard on occasion. One that I like a lot that seems to be getting it right is Nuzzle. NUZZ for the people in North America, EL. You connect it with your LinkedIn and your Twitter, and it will tell you the articles that your network is sharing. So it bubbles up all the content that they're sharing. So I actually find a few articles that I then tweet out of Nuzzle. So I find that pretty effective from an aggregator point of view. If Twitter were smart, they would buy Nuzzle, and then you would actually get some really good algorithm, you know, news you should read. If you had someone to nominate, whether it be someone in your team, someone you follow, someone you've been reading, someone you would nominate for the Sports Geek podcast listeners to follow, and why? Whether it be a Twitter follow or someone that blogs, is there someone that you're a go-to resource for you? You say, "Yep, I'm always keeping an eye on what they're doing."
Was it in this building or anyone?
Anybody. It could be someone, you know. So as an example, we've had people nominate some of their photographers who do killer Instagrams. We've had people who say, I follow so-and-so because they tweet a lot about the content. Or here's someone that I've met and they're always, giving a backstory of what they're doing behind the scenes. So it is pretty much, you get to nominate someone that, hey, give them a shout-out.
TJ from Portland. That's TJ Ainsley. That's who I would nominate.
TJ is, yes, I would second that nomination, and TJ was asking me at South by Southwest to redo his podcast because we did record his podcast in a car on his way to a child's birthday party, so I am scheduled to do another podcast with TJ, but yeah, they're doing terrific stuff in Portland.
Yeah, great guys on there.
Definitely. And lastly, Kevin Durant style, if you had to give a social media platform your MVP, and this is a really strict requirement, you can't sit on the fence and say, I want to give awards out to everybody. What platform, from your point of view, is the MVP and why?
Facebook. It's Facebook. There's no question.
Yep.
And it's the tools. The tools that allow us to identify fans, be able to engage with them.
And all the ad technology and the fact that they're innovating it so often is the main reason for you.
100%.
Yeah. I can't move anybody out. I can't see anyone moving Facebook out of that space. I understand that more and more people are leaning into Instagram as far as a personal preference on, hey, this is what I like to use.
But that is my personal preference, too, without a doubt, Instagram.
Yeah.
But from a business perspective, it's Facebook, and it's not even close. I don't know how you'd make a case for anything else. But.
Yeah, I completely agree. So thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Kevin, where can people find you on the internet if they want to send you a tweet or reach you? How can people find you?
Twitter at Kevin_Kinghorn is where they can reach me on Twitter, but or on LinkedIn. Reach out to me on LinkedIn.
Okay. Well, I will include your details in the show notes. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It's been great to catch up. I have got a lot of people now saying I've got to come up to Vancouver. So that is on the list for a future trip, because it does sound like a beautiful part of the world. And I tend to be dragged into cities where I've got lots of friends. So I'm looking forward to going up to Vancouver in the not too distant future.
We'd love to host you. Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
All right. Appreciate it.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Kevin Kinghorn from the Vancouver Canucks. Please send him a tweet, Kevin_Kinghorn. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan from Sports Geek. One thing I will ask at the end of this pod, and it was absolutely terrific to meet so many people, one, who listen to the podcast in real life, but then also people who are part of the Sports Biz Slack group. It's great to get the feedback of how people are using it, whether they're just using it to read and keep up to date with things, connect with people in the industry. We're now just blown by 800 people. We've now opened up multiple channels due to John Spade required there'd be a technology channel. And then the data geeks put their hand up and said, hey, we want a data channel. So please, you really, and a few people have said, how do I use it? What do I do? You get out of it what you put into it. So a few of the things that I've been doing, and I'll be tapping a few of you on the shoulder. If you are using it and you are liking it, please just pick one day a week, and tell us what you're doing. Tell us what you're up to. Tell us the best article you read in the last week. That's enough. If everyone does that, it'll be a terribly more vibrant community than it already is. So yeah, tell us about the cool projects you're working on. Tell us about the technology you're using. Tell us your experiences using spectacles. That kind of thing. So please, you're more than welcome to join. sportsgeekhq.com/slack is where you sign up. And that's where you send all your colleagues. If you're already in there, send them to that page. They'll sign up. Jolly will make sure they get an invite. She'll make sure you're added to the right channels, and just start using it. Start seeing what kind of connections you can make. I just love the fact that there are people in Australia, there are people in North America, in the US and Canada, and then there's a whole stack of executives out of Europe that are also in the sports biz Slack. So I did not think it would be this big once when I started it about 18 months ago. But again, from your feedback, it's well worth continuing. So please join the Sports Biz Slack, and I will talk to you in the next episode of the Sports Geek Podcast. My name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on Facebook.com/SportsGeek. Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at SportsGeekHQ.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to SportsGeekHQ.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.